Hello and welcome to this special edition of the England Athletics podcast, all about the history of sports hall athletics. Sports hall is an indoor form of track and field for children between the ages of 4 and 16. The first competition was held back in 1976. Some of our greatest athletes, like Denise Lewis and Katarina Johnson-Thompson, have come through it, but inspiring the stars of the future is not the only goal. So in front of me, we have a panel of people primed to talk all about this, and I'll let you introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name's Tom Bunner, Managing Director of Quebec Leisure Equipment Limited and also Sports Hall Associates.
Ivan Bonner, I'm a director of Quebec Leisure Equipment Limited, and I was also instrumental in setting up Sports Hall Associates with UK Athletics back in, I believe, 2002 it was.
Hi, I'm Tracy Francis. I work for England Athletics and I manage the Phonetics programme. However, my history with Sports Hall Athletics goes back over 20 years.
Brilliant. So I suppose there's only one place to start, and that's with how the idea of Sports Hall came about. And in order to do that, we have to talk about George Bunner, Tom and I, then your father. So just tell us about his background, because it is a background that is very much connected with athletics, but also by profession, quite different.
Yeah, he's an engineer by profession, but he was an athlete and the next national champion, English schoolboys champion, 880 yards, 1950. And his passion and hobby was athletics. He was from Liverpool and he moved to a small village of Frodsham.
He moved to Frodsham in about 1965.
Yeah. So very soon after he moves there, he decides to set up an athletic club. And at the time, he really thought it was going to be a very serious club. He was an ex-member of Liverpool Harriers, and he advertised for people to join it. And 80% of the people that turned up were children. And in those days, the athletics didn't really cater for children.
Young children.
Yeah, young children. So he didn't really know what to do, and he did write off to the British Athletics Federation, it was, to the coaches, and asked for advice. And it became quite clear there wasn't the resources or methods to deal with it.
Just to clarify that on age, so the youngest athletics went down to in those days was 9 years old, and we ended up with a room full of 9 and 10 year olds, so primary school children, and didn't quite know what to do because he couldn't really do serious senior athletics with them.
There was a chap, a local councillor in the village, Len Downing, and Len Downing was a politician, and he said, don't walk away from them, because if you do, they'll never come back to the sport. So he just set his mind at working with what he had, and they didn't have a track and they didn't have any facility. And he worked in the neighbouring village at a cable manufacturing company, had a social club, and then the local grammar school had a gym, and he started organising sessions on the sports fields. And in the gym, and Tom and I remember, because I was 10 years old at the time, and we remember going to those. And then he had to invent ways to keep the kids occupied, and he did really well at it. He invented all these new games and activities. And then in 1976, they built a sports hall in Frodsham. The sports halls were getting built all around the country. That was when he came up with the idea of, he thought, how am I going to use this facility? And he designed the reversible, was the first thing, so that we could run up and down in the sports hall. And Tom and I remember these things getting built in our garage at our house, you know, he was outside with his friends. And then very soon, what they did was they took the traditional athletics events, high jump, just changed it and modified it so it had a restricted takeoff, limited number of jumps. In the very early days, we ran with normal outside hurdles. We'd never do anything like that now, but that's what was available. And then he introduced things like the standing long jump and the standing triple jump. And they used to be Olympic events a long time ago.
Standing long jump was, yeah.
Standing long jump. Lynn Davis was a record holder, wasn't he, for a long time. And then the vertical jump and things like that. Very soon, and we were looking through the notes the other day, because we've got all this archive of history and stuff, and we were going through, and we've actually got the very first competition, I wrote it down, was in 1977. And it was between Frodsham Athletics Club then. They changed the name to Frodsham Harriers. And Sutton Harriers, wasn't it? And we still got the score sheets. So that's the very first.
Sutton St. Helens.
Sutton St. Helens. So he devised, not only did he devise change the events, it then worked out ways that it could be a team competition. It was very team orientated, and that grew extremely fast.
So central aim really was to fill that gap whereby children weren't being catered for, which obviously seems surprising, doesn't it, as far as athletics goes. You know, you mentioned sort of what was being made in your backyard, an influence from the engineering background perhaps, but the central aim was to fill that gap that children weren't being catered for.
Yes. Also, it's a way to retain people in the winter. A lot of people, athletes, used to disappear in the winter months. It was a method of training as well inside.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we used to, before the sports hall in Frodsham, the athletics club, we used to meet and do sessions on a muddy field and then go out doing road relays.
It was actually an old potato field. My dad managed to scrounge off a farmer who was next to the park, and they painted a track on it, which was a 200-metre track on a slope down a few oak trees. It's still there.
Yeah.
And
it was making do to start off with. So, and then there was a few key people that really backed it, because, you know, to start off with, it was so new that traditional track and field kind of, there was a little bit, you know, what's this? Really, the key person was Ron Pickering. Ron Pickering was a sports commentator at the time, and he just said, this is the way forward. And he backed it, and between them, I think Ron found the first sponsorship for Sports Hall, and that allowed them to do this national competition and put it together. It kind of snowballed. And I remember, because I went away traveling, you know, my profession, and worked as a sailmaker and racing yachts, and I remember coming back. So I hadn't seen sports. I'd grown up with it, probably sort of late 90s, and got roped into Halberton events, because that's what happened in our house. And I couldn't believe the change that had happened. Suddenly there was this, the hall was full of all this bright equipment and the safety hurdles and these new foam javelins, and, you know, all the kids were wearing bibs. It was just amazing. So for me, it was like go from, you know, seeing the traditional, almost traditional sports on, growing into this new, exciting, and it was really noisy. And that's when, you know, I made a decision in 10 years into my sailing career to come back and work with Tom and Dad at the time. I worked very closely with him just to see if we could, at that time, change what was still an amateur outfit into a professional organisation.
I mean, I joined back in sort of 92, and it's my job. It's my job, but it was always my dad's hobby. Sometimes a little conflict with that, because he did like to do everything for free. But between, we've come a long way since then.
Yeah, it's been a fantastic ride. I mean, there was a lot of people, some of the early coaches that gone board with it. Frank Dick was a supporter, and there was various other people along the way. But I think the big change was really when David Moorcroft was running UK Athletics, and his development was a guy called Adam Walker. And we made the decision, right, we're going to work together on this, and we're going to bring it actually into the mainstream athletics and become part of that. And ever since then, you know, that's changed a bit, because it's now England Athletics that are heading up development. But we're always very keen to maintain and work closely with those organisations.
On that note, as you mentioned England Athletics, let's bring in Tracy, who's England Athletics Participation Programmes Manager. Tracy, yeah, just tell us about the link up with England Athletics, but perhaps starting with your background and involvement in Sports Hall.
In my previous life, I worked for Nottingham City Council. I was head of sport at Nottingham City Council. And so Sports Hall was a massive initiative within the city and the county. So I spent many a year organising county finals and working with athletics clubs and also schools to deliver their competition. So, and now working with England Athletics, obviously I'm responsible for phonetics, and phonetics is very much around that primary age of 4 to 11-year-olds, based on the three principles of run, jump and throw. And so we've taken all of what's great within Sports Hall, and we basically say that for schools and for clubs, for that under 11 age range, phonetics is the skill development to lead them into the Sports Hall competition, whether that's a club competition, a school competition. And of course, our principle, the same as Sports Hall, is it's all year round. So traditionally we go outside in the summer, but it enables children to continue to deliver in the winter, in indoor small environments. That's how we connect, really, is very much around we are the skill element to help children hone the run, jump and throw elements of sports hall and get them ready for that competition structure.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it's interesting, Tracy, to have heard that there wasn't really provision for children's athletics at one time, and therefore we reflect on how things have changed.
Yeah, but I would also argue that still a lot of our athletics clubs, track and field clubs, are interested in what we would call the athletes, you know, the members, and they do tend to take them from 8, 9 upwards. And what we're trying to educate is that actually this mass participation, this introductory level, is not really about club members at this point. It's about giving children an opportunity to have fun in a safe environment. Run, jump and throw are principal skills for life. If a child wants to play in the garden or do any other sport, they will need to be able to run, jump or throw. So we're trying to educate track and field clubs that there is a place for 4 to 8-year-olds in their club environment with phonetics. And then they transition them from 9 to 11 actually as athletes. But what we're providing for them is the fundamental skills to bring these children in at the right level for them to develop them then on as athletes.
It's a good point there, Tom. I guess it's not necessarily only looking for athletes of the future, is it? It's physical activity and allowing people to enjoy themselves in an environment that promotes fitness and well-being.
It's exactly that. I mean, England Athletics and ourselves, we say it should be skills, awards, competition, but competition's a driver. Little kids see the Olympics, they see the World Cup, and they go, I want to do that. With the sports or competition, that's what you're trying to achieve. You're trying to get schools to look and say, well, actually, this is lots of fun. But then actually, when they go away back into the schools, is actually be teaching kids the skills, the right skills, and perhaps using the sports or awards to monitor the progression through that. And that over the years has been sort of where we've been concentrating. Although we didn't do anything like in the sort of depth of phonetics, you know, mostly where we perhaps started was the change for us, perhaps in the early 1990s, was when we started selling equipment into schools, but we sold it as for skill development rather than competition. So the first primary athletic kit had things like foam shot put and foam discus and hammers made from quoits, basically things to replicate senior events, but for kids. What we used to supply for resource-wise was very simple activity cards with just the rudimentary, this is how you do a shot put. But I would say before this equipment, it was very difficult to teach athletics in schools. It didn't really happen when we were kids.
Egg and spoon and school sports day.
You know, now school sports day, they're probably using standing long jump and speed bounce and that sort of thing. So it's just made it much easier.
It was about in the late 90s that the Sports Council, I remember them getting involved, and they had the program that they put out with what became Topps Card for all the sports. When they came to see us, they said, you're so far ahead of all the other sports with what you're doing. And I think the Topps Card, because we had those cards then, we had activity cards, which was very, very simple stuff, just how you use the equipment. And I think they kind of went, they did the preliminary meetings and then they went away and they came back with the top system, which they actually used that system in all the other sports. So they were learning from actually what was athletics at the time was really.
But it is, right, Alex, when you actually look at it and you think actually pre-1990, there was very little that was happening in schools in terms of athletics in primary schools. It just wasn't there.
There was very little actually from all NGBs, because I've worked in a number of sports, around simplified games, around short-sided games, small-scale games, simplified rules, simplified competition structures for children. We were trying to continue to shoehorn children into adults' provision. And there was that massive step change, as you actually said. Sports hall were well in advance of the majority of NGBs because they had come up with this format for predominantly primary school children. Most sports were not looking at the 5 to 8s, the 8 to 11s. They were only really interested in you know, athletes or footballers that were going to go on to become, you know, professionals, you know, and it was all about the pathway. It was all about elite athletes. It was about the elite pathway. But it's about having the right offer. If the offer is right and you introduce it at the right level and the passion for it and you have the right school coaches and the equipment's fun and the skill elements are fun and the children can see themselves progressing, then of course they're going to want to stay. So you're absolutely right. You know, in terms of TOPS. TOPS was a real game changer, I think, and I was a TOPS tutor. So it was a real game changer for a lot of sports to actually now for them to consider, what are we doing for the primary age range and how do we simplify this and make it appropriate for children of 5, 6, 7, 8?
Yeah, it was something Dad always said. I remember he's always said, you know, because a lot of those athletes did stay. And we got people like Denise Lewis and Mark Lewis Francis who'd come through. They all were sports haulers, all came through the system. And Dad said, you see, you've got to cater for them, but you've got to cater for their friends who might not actually be very good at athletics in the early days. And that's what he did, is make it appealing and fun for all the kids and something that you'd want to do with your friends.
As he said, if the kid that comes last says, I want to do it again, then you know you've got it right.
And of course, you still had the skill element to it and the structure to it to enable those that were talented and gifted to actually achieve their potential.
Yeah, I think one element, though, not to be overlooked, is the skill threshold. So to actually be part of the sports hall program, it isn't that difficult. Anybody can do that. It's not like doing keepy uppies in soccer. You know, the skill threshold, that's quite high.
So you mentioned Denise Lewis and Mark Lewis Francis. What are the other names that people might have heard of and what's been your interaction with them?
Yeah, so at the moment we've got Katrina Johnson-Thompson, who was a sports hauler from Liverpool. We had people who came through the championships, people like Morgan Lake, who ended up in the team. Probably fair to say that most kids now in this country will experience some sort of sports or athletics in their school. There's pretty much all primary schools are going to have some of our kit there, which is standing, long jump, foam, javelins, that sort of thing. So in the past, we've had Jamie Bolster's been a big supporter. We've had Kelly Sutherton. We've had Kelly Holmes, big supporter.
Yeah, Premier League footballers.
Nader Madua won our championship.
He won 2 years on the run. He was the national all-rounder champion in Birmingham. But he actually left athletics and he ended up playing left back. I remember being at the game, left back for Manchester City.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's all right.
He's a pundit now. Yeah.
There were some other Premier League footballers that came through.
Yeah. Name from Leeds, went to join Liverpool.
And our cousin, Katie Livingston.
Yeah.
She was on the modern pentathlon Olympics. She went to the Olympics.
In Tokyo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is okay, we deal at a national championships and we'll see some of the sports hall people come through there, but most of the activity is on the ground. It's in counties and the people that we won't know exactly who's been doing it, but generally people will say that afterwards that's what they did as a kid.
You said someone went to Leeds and joined Liverpool?
James.
Not James Milner then?
It was James Milner, isn't it?
I think so.
Wasn't he on one of the Leeds sports hall teams?
He was, yeah.
Don't hold us that one, but I think it is then.
Isn't that the whole point of this, though, that we talk about athletics, but again, we were saying these are lifelong skills that children need. And I think that's absolute proof that some of those children, and the guys are right, most children now in a primary school environment will have been exposed to sports hall athletics. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a phenomenal fact in itself. But the beauty of that is they've got all of that evidence to prove that actually it works, because we've got, you know, hundreds of athletes now at national, international level, and you've got the world heptathlon and Commonwealth champion Katarina Johnson-Thompson, who also is the ambassador for phonetics as a byproduct of sports hall. And then you've got all of these professional footballers, and I'm sure there are hockey players and rugby players and what have you. They all started at sports hall.
Didn't you right, Chase? We were saying the fundamentals, the three things you have to get right with kids is athletics, swimming and gymnastics. If you can get those nailed, you've got a very, you know, well-rounded kid.
And it's being part of a team as well. I think that's the thing, you know, we talked about being a Premier League footballer, you're in a team. And I think in history, being in athletics wasn't quite so much the team game. It certainly is for the sports hall side of it. It's very much the team that you're cheering for.
So you mentioned some of the countries that you'd been to. Just explain how some of those opportunities come about, because I gather that you've been involved with refugee children as well.
Yes. So did you go to Turkey? Was it Turkey?
Yeah, it was the earthquake zone and they were working. There's a few stories. My father's got amazing stories of working with actually after the Bosnian War.
So one of the ladies that was there at the time actually ended up years later going to Saudi Arabia to do a project there for us. So that was at the behest of the Saudi Arabian government. So Reebok asked us to do a lot of stuff in the 90s, going to Europe. So, and out of that, we now sell regularly into Norway, into Belgium, and into Spain. So there's a sports hall project going on in Spain.
Tom just mentioned Saudi. We did the very first women's, well, it was actually girls' sports program in the Middle East, which was in Qatar. After that, we went to Saudi Arabia, and the first time we went to do the very first ever girls' sports competition program, they wouldn't do it the first time. We set it all up, and then they were like, they didn't want to do it. And then we went back, and then recently we've done the development project with the Saudi government, where we sent, there was how many, 10?
8 or 9 went out from here.
Yeah, female sports development officers who are working with universities and things out there. Lots of really very exciting things to do.
Yeah, it was an interesting project because trying to ask people here, young ladies here in the 20s, right, do you want to do 6 weeks work in Saudi Arabia? Most of them look, they don't know anything about Saudi Arabia. And but all of them came back and said probably it's one of the best things they'd ever done. It's great. And we had about 20,000 kids that went through the program. And what actually came at the end of it was when you look at the results and you realise the size of the problem they've got, because the skill level and the fitness levels are just not there in those children. To actually do a two-footed jump, a takeoff, there was beyond a lot of them.
Yeah, we've had some marvellous experiences. We ended up in the very north of Canada and Inuit villages and places, and we'd arrive with the van, and we'd get all these bags of equipment out, and we'd have all these systems. And the kids' eyes, you'd almost won them over before you started. They'd just look at the equipment, they're like, wow, what's this? And because we were so practiced at working with large groups of kids of completely different skill levels, you would give them a really good time for, you know, an hour or 2 hours. And then, you know, they'd just be blown away. We had got very clear pictures of some fantastic things that happened when we were down in Australia, and there was a group of kids came up and they just said, that was the best thing we've ever done. Not just sports. They were just like, we've never done anything so much fun. They loved it. And in Canada, you know, it was sometimes the kids who'd never done any sport before. I can even remember kids naming one. This kid called Dylan, who was, he was the slowest runner in the school. But when he was part of the team, they needed him to finish the race, and the whole school was cheering. It was brilliant. Actually, there it's quite tribal, so you go to the chief and you talk to the chief and you'd be able to say, this is the results that your kids got and this is the results they got in Toronto. And it became quite competitive. They'd be like, right, okay, so you get the buy-in there. There was all sorts of, you know, exciting things that we did, mainly because dad wouldn't say no to something. Someone had phoned him up, and we'd almost be sometimes trying to concentrate on the business and the work that we had to do. And then someone had phoned him from Norway and he was like, yeah, I'm going. And he would design this project. I chatted to him the other day because he knew we were doing this. And he told me a story I hadn't heard before about when he very first went to Norway. So they used to arrive, and communication in those days was not so easy because you didn't have cell phones and you used the fax machine a lot. And we've got boxes of letters that were written between the two countries. That's how it was, a very slow process. So you never really knew what you were going to get when you arrived. And he arrived at this one sports centre. And he said it really did look like a building site. But the sports hall was finished. But it was up two floors or something like that. And they were wondering how they got the equipment in. And the building site workers stopped, took all the equipment up, and then ended up running the event. They were the officials for the event. So lots of nice stuff like that happened.
Yeah, no, nice stories. I suppose then it brings us on to what can we do to keep Sports Hall thriving and to continue to be successful. Tracy, don't know if you want to come in with any thoughts on this.
Well, I think it's really important that we continue to consider how important sport and physical activity and PE is in primary schools. And that's, you know, for me, that has to be the first thing. We have to protect PE in primary schools. We have to give teachers and teaching assistants confidence to deliver. And as, you know, the gentleman said, sometimes athletics can be complicated. It's like 8 sports in one, isn't it? So, you know, the fact that we have phonetics and sports all in primary education, both of them have very easy activity cards. Phonetics particularly now has how-to videos as well. We have our own sports day resource to take the pressures off the egg and spoon race. So, you know, it first and foremost, protect PE in the curriculum and after school, make sure that we've got an educated and competent workforce with confidence, and also, most importantly, that we keep all the fun elements to the two programmes for children so that they can develop both their skills and their competition structure based on a child-centric approach.
Absolutely spot on. That's what needs to happen. You know, there's a lot of people trying to keep make sure that PE is kept on that agenda. And as long as it's on the agenda, we, you know, hopefully athletics can benefit from that. I was actually at an event 2 weeks ago. I ended up going down there to help someone deliver something. And the guy that ended up running it, it was the first event that he'd done. The reason he'd asked us to do it before, because he just hadn't perhaps got the confidence to do it. So that first event, after about 10 minutes, you couldn't get the mic out of his hand. And all of a sudden, now he's going to run his own events every year. And I'm thinking that's absolutely fantastic, because that's what we want. That's proper legacy, where you can go somewhere, show them something, leave, and it carries on.
The sports or clubs competition has been going for so long now that we went through, as you say, the golden years of sponsorship with so many teams. We had teams in the old days that used to come down from the Shetland. We had Shetland and Orkney involved, and then Northern Ireland would bring teams over, and teams coming up from the Isle of Wight. And it was such a huge event at the National Indoor Arena in Birmingham. And then, of course, the athletics, you know, have even moved out, and we actually lost that sponsorship. But we made a decision to keep it going. We were building it back up again, and then, of course, we went through COVID, which really didn't do anybody any good. And we've just been building that, but we managed to keep it going again, and we're building that and really just work with the aides and make sure we strengthen that and keep that going.
Provides a key pathway from schools into clubs. That's what why it's very, very important. The conversation we've been having over the last couple of years with Tracy is all about, say, what can we do with that club competition? How can we strengthen it? How can we get more clubs involved so they can take their, you know, have strong junior sections, but then lead on to senior athletes. There is so many stories that we have. We could be here for days.
We've got an office that's now just filled with all these resources, and we've found
press articles,
all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
Pictures of Princess Kate with a foam javelin throwing it and all that sort of
thing.
The Queen at a sports hall event.
Daley Thompson was involved.
He was.
There's a lot of photos of Daley. I think Daley was actually on the very first sports hall posters.
Yes,
that were done, and he was throwing, you know, doing the standing long jump, and I remember seeing that when I was at high school. We had that poster on the wall.
Yeah. Did you say that Princess Kate was at an event? Yeah. Did you say that the Queen was at an event? Because we need to tell that story in full, really.
So in my office, I wasn't there, but I've got a picture of the Queen standing at a sports hall event. I've also got a picture from one of the national newspapers. Kate throwing a foam javelin. Actually, we've got boxes and boxes of stuff.
Yeah.
Press clippings from all sorts of different places.
I think we've got a picture of Dad being presented with something by the Queen when in the 1950s.
He was national 3A junior champion, so he was about 18 at the time, and he ran the 800. He won the 800.
880 yards.
Yes,
it was back then. His claim to fame is he won it in the slowest time ever. It was back on the days when they had cinder tracks.
500-meter cinder track with oval banked curves.
He said his tactic was he went out and slowed all the runners down because he knew he'd beat them on speed. And he ended up winning that one.
Brilliant. I mean, the influence going as far as the Queen being at an event, I mean, that's quite something to cherish and keep hold of, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, no, I think it was Prince Charles throwing the javelin. The King, sorry. When he was.
The person that the royal family probably had most contact with was Princess Anne. She just seemed to pop up now and again.
Well, her kids did it, didn't they?
Yeah, so actually we went to do a development at their school for Zara when she was about 10. We ran a sports hall event at Zara's school. They had a golf course, I think I remember.
If you have the right idea, passion and the tenacity, you know, your dad obviously spent years developing this concept, refining it, but a whole industry has grown from it, right? You know, not only have you conquered England, Scotland, Wales, but now you've also conquered the world. You know, there are lots of countries now influenced by sports hall, and you changed the face of athletics for juniors, for children. And I think, you know, what an amazing legacy that is. You can now see in the 2030 years, years that actually children who came through Sports Hall are now world champions and Commonwealth champions. You know, it's a great history, but it also has a great future as well.
You don't know what you said, right? It was actually the tenacity of our father.
Yeah,
he just didn't let it go. He worked and he worked and he worked and he refined something which started off quite crude to start with into something that it wasn't just him. There was a lot of, you know, people getting involved, and it was a team. But without him, it wasn't happening.
Yeah, it was amateur, and that was the change was in the late 90s when you had this group of people that did it because they loved it.
He had an army of people to help him. Yeah. So he didn't just do sports, but he was running outdoor events, he was running cross-country events, he organised a team league for kids in Cheshire, which still exists. He'd be able to pick up the phone when he had an event, and he'd be calling all sorts of people from all over the place saying, "You will help me, won't you?" And they were, "Yes, George," you know, and that's how he did it. In his local club, he used to get the parents of the kids that would come and help him, and they would just sort of learn to be coaches and all that. So from that grew a team of people who had the opportunity to travel, not just around Britain, but also in other countries as well, that they would never have that opportunity. Mm. And then every year, you see them come together, national final, and they'd know all these other people from all over the country. We sometimes forget about that. We sometimes forget what athletics and sport can bring other than the actual kids doing the sport. It actually brought that. It was a hobby for those people. Yeah. It was very important. It was a major part of their lives.
But we shouldn't downplay as well the contribution that both of you have made to Sports Hall, because without your business skill set, your knowledge, you know...
We didn't have a choice though, Tracy.
Yes. You're very kind, Tracy.
Growing up in our house.
Yes, what would you have done if you hadn't have done this?
Well, to be honest, it was a long time ago that I thought, actually... Myself, I looked at it and thought, oh, I want to do this, because although at the time it was a company that was probably hands to mouth, it wasn't doing particularly well, but it was like, this is going to be fun. It's going to be an interesting ride. You know, it's not like your big corporates with lots of money and everything. It's going to be a really interesting ride. And then I still remember the day I was looking out the window in my office and just realized actually how big it was or he's going to become. Wow, I get what he's created now. And I thought that, you know, well, it's fun. It's had its up and downs like everything else, but actually as a job, it's fun.
You know, between jobs, I would get a job being a van driver for one of my dad's projects. We drove right the way across Canada, one of the best jobs I've ever had in my life. All I had to do was take the equipment out and set it all up. I was just blown away by how good the program was.
Myself and Ivan, we actually went to Cape Canaveral,
the NASA Space Center. It was while I was still yachting, we went up to the Space Center up there. And one of the things that I was just blown away by, it really is a marketing job, the Space Center, to sell space to the people and say, this is what we're spending your money on. One of the things that stuck in my head was they had to train the astronauts to do all these tasks. And they had big teams of people looking at it saying, right, strip down basic processes to their key elements. And then the idea was that you got them into the astronaut's head in the fastest time, and all the, you know, superfluous stuff wasn't there. And it just really stuck with me. And when we came back to doing things like, you know, this, which is the book, and I really, that heavily influenced what we're doing now.
What I like about it is it's also totally random, because what we were actually doing at the time, we didn't have any idea to go to NASA. We were just riding around on motorbikes. We had a motorbike trip. We just happened to ride past him and thought, well, let's go stop in there and have a look.
It did influence us, because what we tried to do, we took all these different resources and we condensed them. And actually, the only way we could do it at the time was we went up and hired an office in a business park in Chester for about 6 months, and myself and a sports development officer called Nicola Davis at the time. And we just sat there for 6 weeks and coordinated all this new artwork. And we had to go backwards and forwards with all the coaches and came up with a very simple format. And it's, you know, it's still there, mainly because it's simple. With like Sports Hall, it's simple. We got put in some quite difficult situations. We mentioned Turkey before, and I remember being invited as a guest. The Turkish Women's Olympic Committee had decided to do a Sports Hall event. They'd watched our video and they said, well, what do you need? Do you need our help? No, we're going to run it. It'll be fine. And we got there and they'd invited. It was an indoor sports facility. I think there was 500 kids going to compete in the event. And then there was probably about 2,000 people turned up for it. And 2 days before, I said, well, where's all your equipment? And they were like, well, we've got this. And they really didn't have any equipment. And I remember phoning my dad saying, I think we've got a bit of a problem. And he was amazing. He just went to it. And as I say, faxes in these days. And he wrote an athletics program because we had a small 200-meter indoor track. And one of the key things with sports is the way that we sort of handle large groups of people is you use a color-coded system so you know the red team or the blue team or the yellow team. And he said, well, we're not going to use bibs, we're going to use T-shirts. And they bought all the kids' T-shirts, but they'd got them all, they were white. So they were all the same color. So we had to go out and buy crepe paper, and we made crepe paper bands for the different teams. We got through the day, and the kids, the parents, they just had such a wonderful time. It's probably one of the most nerve-wracking experiences in my life, was trying to get that many people through the event. But there's been some great experiences like that one.
And I think that's the beauty of it as well, isn't it? That you can just pop it anywhere. So, you know, England Athletics has a number of national events each year. And so we take the activation zone to some of these events, whether they're junior events or even adult events. And of course, we set up the speed bounce challenge and the standing long jump and what have you. And it's a real family affair. You know, dads are taking on their daughters, and obviously the children win every time because they can bounce, you know. And most of us can't do a 20-second speed rounds anymore. But it appeals to everybody. It was, you know, it's built for children, but adults alike still love it. And they still have that nostalgia. Every time you get a parent that comes and sees the speed bounds, the first thing they say is, I did this at sports hall as a kid. And that's a lovely legacy, I think.
Absolutely. So to say to Tom and Ivan, yeah, congratulations on what you've achieved, you know, your commitment, your passion, your curiosity as well, which I think has helped you explore so much within this to great success. Tracy, it's been fascinating to hear your insight, your involvement through your career, and also, yeah, in turn, your commitment to making sure that Sports Hall continues to thrive. So thank you, everyone, for joining. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this podcast.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.